Hi, this is Dan. I'm here with Brian. We're going to record a podcast.
Yes, we are.
I was listening to our previous podcast, and I think every single one so far I've started by talking to the other person and saying, "How you doing today, Brian?" So I keep up the tradition. How you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Dan?
Pretty good. This is our second podcast together. Our first one was TV theme songs, the show Community, and then the bonus portion, which was about Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah, so it was almost sort of two.
Yeah. I actually think that the Avatar one, like, I laughed the most listening back to that one than I have all of the other ones.
Honestly, I like the sound bits that you bookend the podcast with. That's like my favorite part that I always am listening
to. It's a surprise.
Because it's something new, you know?
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah, you do a good job.
Oh, thanks. So we're going to talk about movies. Specifically, we're going to talk about, how did we phrase it? It was movies,
things we haven't seen. That's okay. What I'm calling the name of this post.
So, things we haven't seen is actually broken into two parts. It's movies that are made that we haven't seen. So we're going to discuss some of the holes in movies that we've seen. Because we both like movies. Brian's probably a little bit more of a cinephile than I, but we both like the movies. And we were looking at lists. So we were looking at the IMDb Top 250.
And the AFI Top 100.
And then we were also talking about TV shows. We were looking at the TV Guide top 60 shows. I think it's 60, yeah.
I count here. It says 60, yes. That's because TV Guide just celebrated their 60th anniversary.
Okay.
Well, that's why they're doing a bunch of countdowns, 60, 60, 60.
I did not know that they were doing any, other than this one, when I Googled best TV shows, I didn't know they were doing any top 60 shows.
I'm still subscribed.
Really?
It's not really worth it.
You're one of the 17 people.
They used to give you more information than they do now.
So, we were talking about, we've both seen The Shawshank Redemption, which is number one on the IMDb Top 250, and I think it's on the AFI. It might be like 95 or something like that. But I'm pretty sure it's somewhere on the...
It's definitely the one that's got the popular vote.
But it's one of my favorite movies. It's yet to come in my top 100 everything. We were talking about the crazy coincidence at the end, and we couldn't really explain this one away, is how Brooks and Red end up staying in the same room before the end.
It's just a little too convenient. Well, here's he sees that thing on the wall.
Here's the theory I just came up with as I was saying that. So, like, what if it's a room that's, like, just for, like, that they rent out to ex-cons? It's, like, some program. They rent out to ex-cons of this prison. That makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
But it's still, they don't integrate that in there. So
right.
You just have
it
to
seems
think.
Like somebody else would have gotten out, like, in between.
Or something.
Like, did they out themselves, too? Were they in a...
Who knows?
Maybe there's two rooms, and he went into room number two.
But the way the movie shows it, you think it's just like, here's a random apartment room, and it happens to be the same one.
Uh-huh.
But you need the contrast. You need the guy who gave up on hope and the guy who embraces hope.
Right.
Spoiler alert, the movie ultimately embraces hope. The Shawshank Redemption shouldn't be that surprising.
In fact, I believe that is the final word of the film.
I know the whole final speech. I used to. I might not anymore. But the last two words are, I hope. Yeah. I hope
the Pacific is as
blue as it is in my dreams. No, I hope I make it across the border. Well, yeah, anyways, he has a lot of things he hopes, and then I hope is the last two. My favorite quote from the movie. Back in the day, I ranked my top 25 favorite quotes from that movie, and that was number one. So
it's good he was able to remember Ziwan Taneho.
Yeah,
over those years.
It was a little bit elaborate to get to that.
Yeah, just gotta, like, dig in that field. And
that's
stuff.
Okay. So maybe we should talk about what we were going to talk about.
Sure. So we have seen The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
When did you see it?
Ooh, when did I first see it? It was probably in high school. Mm. I remember seeing it with my then-girlfriend, now-wife, early in college. She might have still been in high school. But I had seen it like two or three times before then. I was like, you got to see this movie. And she was like, not really into it. I was like, you've got to be into this movie. It's a great movie. And she was kind of meh. But it sounds like you're a little bit meh.
Yeah,
on
I
that
mean,
one
I, I had heard it really talked up. And so I finally saw it freshman year of college. It was one of the first movies I saw on Netflix.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
I enjoyed it. But the ending, I have a tendency to spoil endings for myself. And so
you can't have that one spoiled.
Didn't get the full punch.
Yeah. Okay. So again, we have seen that one. Let's talk about things we have not seen. So,
okay,
you have the most glaring cinema
hole.
I've got some
big holes. So I'm slowly filling.
As someone who probably knows more about movies than just about anyone I know, why don't you reveal what you consider your number one hole?
Oh, the cockles of my heart are warmed with your glowing.
You certainly know more about like I would say in the breadth of all movies, you know more than just about anyone I know.
The weird ones. The
yeah.
Weird ones. Let's say the biggest one, you know, debatable, of course, but I'd say The Godfather. Never seen The Godfather.
That's the one I was thinking of. I was surprised when you told me you hadn't seen that one.
Like,
so
I feel like I've taken in the key points.
Yeah.
Just because it's all over the place.
Yeah.
But
it is everywhere.
It's like I know that fat Marlon Brando, he like puts an orange slice in his mouth and he makes a monster face and then he like dies in a tomato field.
Yeah, that no, that happens.
Yeah,
And
like I think Fredo gets like shot.
Yep.
These are my takeaways.
Okay, so you like you know like two of the five last scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
But the
and then isn't there's some guy who like wants to be an actor and they're like twisting people's arms to make him an actor.
Yep, that's the horse head.
Yep.
Yep. So you know the iconic scenes. I think you should see it because it's not going to live up to the hype of like being the most popular movie ever. Like it's number, what is it? It's number 3 on the AFI movie list and number 2 on the IMDb movie list.
And its sequel, Godfather Part 2, was the only sequel so far to win Best Picture.
Oh, wow. Toy Story 3 should have won in 2010.
Mm.
Maybe. Anyways, actually, there were a good bunch of good movies. And you know what should have won? Wait, 2010, was that the year that had...
That was King's Speech.
And Social Network. Social Network should have won. That was my favorite from that year. That was, well, like, in the realm of movies that was realistically going to win. So, because I knew Toy Story 3 wasn't going to win. But
right.
The question, a good question would be, would it have been nominated if they were still doing 5 movies?
Yeah. I can't really say. I think, you know, what is it that made Beauty and the Beast make it in 91 versus the things that make it now? Like,
I don't know.
Like, is Beauty and the Beast that much better than say, Up or
right.
or Toy Story 3?
Are those the only other ones that have been nominated? I think so. I don't think
that's
Wall-E.
That's what comes to mind. I don't think anything...
Wall-E was not, right?
I don't believe so.
So, I mean, I think it's a combination of... Boy, we're diverging here. That's okay. I think it's a combination of... like, Beauty and the Beast had this reputation of being, like, a more complete and, like, mature and developed film than maybe the ones that came before it, like, Little Mermaid. So, like, it was a great movie on its own terms. Like, it didn't need to be influential. It didn't need to be all these other things. It was just, like, a great movie. And it was very critically acclaimed and everyone loved it. But it also had, like, a maturity and a depth to it, almost, so... But Up has that too, and Toy Story 3 very much has that too, so I don't know.
Maybe it's just more movies being made.
Yeah. So I'm pretty good on, like, the great movies I want to see. I have to say, like, if a movie came out before, I don't know what the cutoff year is, but it might be, like, 1970. If it came out, like, before 1970, I'm a little bit less enthusiastic to see it. Because not that there's no great movies before 1970, there's a lot of movies I love before then, but I've just found that, like, the way that we tell stories in movies has gotten a lot more sophisticated in, like, the past 30 years, past 40 years, I guess. So, like, movies from the late 70s onward tend to have, like, stories I get more into, whereas movies from before then, like, the way they tell stories, like, it doesn't really click with me as much.
It's certainly gotten different. It's certainly gotten faster.
Yeah.
You know, not, like, even in terms of the shot lengths, much, much shorter, much, much
snappier.
Quicker.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
if your holes are filled, I have a few more to address. One is Casablanca.
Oh,
talking
yeah.
about the older stuff, I've somehow managed not to see Casablanca. I have the DVD. I got it from a friend who worked at a Blockbuster, and then his Blockbuster went out of business. He was the manager, and since we were friends, he handed over a big stack of DVDs to me.
That's awesome.
And it goes C through F, and it goes Casablanca to Fight Club.
Oh, nice.
And so there's definitely some good ones in there. There's a lot of random stuff, too. I think Chicago's in there. Still got to see that one.
So I love Casablanca. Haven't seen Chicago. Casablanca. It is. It's a movie, like, I actually really agree with Roger Ebert, who, like, there's nothing, he points out that most of the movies from back then that are really beloved, or, like, let's say anything before 1975, so you got The Godfather, you got Citizen Kane, you got Lawrence of Arabia.
Why 75 specifically? You thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I don't know, I'm just, like, because that's about when, like, the Spielbergs and the Lucases and the Scorseses. Like, that was kind of a revolution point. Like, not that everything before that is one big era, but there was certainly, like, a change in the mid-70s. So, like, everything that's kind of in the pre-modern era of film, generally, if it's beloved, it was, like, very technically proficient. Even Gone with the Wind, which didn't really innovate, I don't think, but it was, like, very, like, high budget.
It was a color movie in 1939.
Yeah,
so
like, it did.
Like, a big, sweeping color epic.
Yeah. And it was, like, it was generally, like, beautiful and well shot. I mean, not that Casablanca is not well shot. It's very well shot. But, like, it's there because of its charm. And that makes it kind of unique among the most beloved movies. It's, like, it's just, like, a sentimental, romantic, like, good story, good characters. Like, normally the movies that have lasted because of, like, technical innovations and, like, you can't really see anything like this, before or after because it did it differently. Casablanca is just like it's you just get into the actors and the characters. It's just like a charming movie. So I would definitely see it again. I mean, I would encourage you to see it. It's not going to blow your mind. I mean, it's like it is what it is. It's like a little love story about this war torn little nation, and they kind of a lot of things intersect in this one bar. And it's like a little story, but it's well done.
So. I think it's interesting that it's so of the times. You know, it's a World War II movie. Made during World War II.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. There was another one I was thinking about. Not Cuckoo's Nest, To Kill a Mockingbird. That is like a civil rights movie, but if you think about it, it came out like basically during the civil rights movement. Like,
right.
You'd think it would be one that would be reflecting back into it, but it actually happens basically during it. So. That was another one that's kind of in the same area for that for me.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I've checked a few off on my list recently. A lot of them through Netflix, for one. Apocalypse Now, I just saw.
Oh, I haven't seen that. So what do you think of Apocalypse Now?
I liked it. I thought it was... Well, it's very much based on the book Heart of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was an interesting twist that they take it and set it in the... Instead of... You know, the heart of darkest Africa, they said it in Vietnam. Kind of this place where civilization has fallen away.
Okay.
And so you've got this character who seeks kind of this dark, this twisted freedom out there.
Interesting.
He's like a warlord. So he's like this American military guy who's gone out and become a warlord out in the jungles of Vietnam. And he's got like this cult following. He's like a warrior king.
Okay.
And so the story follows lower-ranking military officer who's sent out there to find him and brave the wilds and kill him.
Yeah.
And kind of finding himself identifying with this mindset as he heads into the jungle.
That makes it sound more badass than, like, I originally... Because, like, when people talk about it, they normally talk about how, like, intense it is and how, like, it was really shot in the jungle and stuff. They don't really talk about, like, the story of it. But, no, that makes me interested to see it.
And I gotta admit, the scene where the helicopters are coming in and they say, we play, what is it? He says, Wagner makes him shit. That's the wording. And so they play music out of the helicopters that come swarming in and drop the napalm and stuff
right.
over the jungles. And so they play the Ride of the Valkyries.
Yeah.
And it is really intense.
Very nice.
That was certainly a memorable scene.
One movie that, like, I've always been attracted to the idea of the movie and, like, what I understand what it is, and this kind of breaks my pre-like modern era of cinema rule, is On the Waterfront. Have you seen On the Waterfront?
I've not.
Okay.
That's I could have been a contender.
Yeah, I use that line all the time. Could have been class. Could have been a contender. But it's supposed to have like Brando kind of like broke ground, like set some, you know. Like, it was a great acting job that feels more modern than like most of the stuff, and it's just like a good story of a, I'm big into coming of age stories and like losing innocence stories, so like that's supposed to be what that is. It's supposed to be pretty good. That's one that I've really wanted to see. I'm trying to think what some of the other ones are. I haven't seen Doctor Strangelove either.
Oh, that made an honorable mention on my countdown.
That's right, yeah, it did.
Yeah, definitely a highly rated one for me. A good story of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very sardonic. It's funny. It's a dark comedy. I was talking about it with a friend of mine a while back, and he classified dark comedies as... what it really means is it's not funny.
Interesting.
Dark comedy... In other words, not actually funny.
So what do you think about that? I don't know. Do you agree with that?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't. But I think it's a funny description.
That is. It makes you think about it.
It's very... I describe it as wry, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very dry. It's very...
Like, it's not... It's like... It's not very jokey, you know? Like,
right.
You have...
Like, it's kind of morbid. Like, not in the sense that... That like there's gore or anything or any one specific thing, but it's that the fate of the world hangs in the balance. Basically, the world is about to end,
okay.
And they're still keeping up formalities, and they've still got their petty differences between the U.S. and the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
And that's stopping them from doing anything to really intervene in preventing Armageddon.
I wonder how like relevant it would seem right now. Like, there's, like, the stuff with, I don't know, just, like, there's been two plane crashes in the last week and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this whole, all this chaos.
I wonder what's
going to
come out about that. That's just, it's weird.
Yeah. But it makes you think, like, all, like, almost movies that were like that about, like, these powers, like, doing things and, I don't know, like, how much that's going to stand the test. I mean, I feel like what I'm saying is I think, like, that... It might come across as kind of prophetic. Like that actually makes me want to see it more, you know?
Mm-hmm. And another one that I just knocked out for myself is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah? You hadn't seen that?
No, I hadn't. That's another one I caught on Netflix.
I love Pulp Fiction. I, at one point, probably if you'd asked me while I was in college at any point, I would have put it in my top 10 movies. It didn't quite make my top 100 everything, but honestly, I'm not sure how I missed it on my... honorable mentions. Like, I probably should have brought it up there. So what did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I did not come quite as high on my list as Inglourious Basterds.
Oh yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but I think there's a talk coming up between me and Colton on this subject.
Oh really?
Confirm this. I gotta get back to him and actually schedule the logistics of it, but about the linear versus non-linear storytelling.
Okay.
And it seemed like, at least to me, and of course I have only watched it once, not twice or multiple times, but it seemed like the non-linear storytelling in Pulp Fiction didn't really serve it. I think it would have stuck with me just as much had it been linear.
Interesting. See, I kind of agree with that but I also don't agree with that because I actually really like the way it does its storytelling because it has the way that it has the story with the cafe come back at the end. Like, oh, I remember this. The first time I ever watched it, it was the scene where they realize they're back at the cafe, they're doing the stick up, and it's like, oh crap, this is like something we've already seen. Like, we're back here. And then my DVD player busted and shot out the DVD. I was like, oh no! Because I didn't know that was the end either. I was like, I need to know what happens next. And like, the way that the software I was using to watch DVDs, because this was on my computer, worked, is I put it back in, and I had to, like, it took me, like, a half hour to fast-forward back through it. And finally I got there, and it was, like, 4 more minutes of the movie, or whatever. Actually, it might not have even been that much. It might have been, like, another 2 minutes, and then, like, the end. So, there's so much good stuff in Pulp Fiction. I'm glad you've seen it, because there's so much in there. I mean, like, people talk about Royale with cheese or whatever. My favorite thing is... It's the wallet that says "bad motherfucker," and you're like, "What does that mean? Like, what does he does? It says that. Like, does it give the impression of someone who would own it would be a bad motherfucker? Like, what is?" And then he pulls it out. It's actually a wallet that says, has the words on it, bad motherfucker. And I just laughed for like 10 minutes when I saw that.
Yeah.
Very
the,
good.
The dialogue is definitely, you know, it's sharp.
Yeah.
It flows like the way that a conversation would if you cut out the boring parts.
Exactly. Well, that's what he says. People are like, how do you write such good dialogue? He's like, I write hundreds of pages of dialogue between the characters, and I cut out everything except the best stuff, and I take what's left, and that's my movie. So you can kind of see that there, like, it's interesting.
And the part where he accidentally shoots the guy in the face.
Oh, shit, I shot him in the face. I forget what his name is.
Just like Donnie or Danny or something.
Yeah, I shot Donnie in the face, yeah. Like, it shouldn't be funny, but
yeah,
it is.
Take it to the cleaner.
Yeah. I love Pulp Fiction. I want to watch it again now. I haven't seen any James Dean movies. I haven't seen Rebel Without a Cause.
Neither
or
have I. Maybe we gotta have
Giant.
A James Dean night.
I would do it. I would watch, because he was only in like, how many? I'm thinking he was only in like five movies
something
or
like
something.
That. He didn't stick around for very long.
Well, yeah. What else have I not seen? I have not seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I have seen that one. That's what Raindrops Keep Falling on Your Head comes from.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Oh, I didn't know that. And I don't think either of us have seen Network.
No, I've heard good things, though.
Yeah.
And they reference it prominently in my favorite film, UHF. And so when Stanley Spadowski makes his Life is Like a Mop speech.
Interesting.
At the end he yells, "These floors are dirty as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore."
Which yeah, because that's the famous line.
Right.
I'm
which
mad
I,
as hell.
I only learned subsequently.
Okay. So those are movies. I have more TV shows to talk about than movies. So
fair enough.
I think
I've definitely got some to talk about.
So I think yours are, you've generalized the TV shows you're missing a little bit. So you haven't seen the HBO shows.
I have not
the premium,
seen the HBO shows.
The premium
let's knock them out now. Wire, haven't seen. Sopranos, haven't seen. Game of Thrones, haven't seen.
6 Feet Under.
What's True Detective on?
HBO.
I haven't seen.
Okay, there you go. I've seen two seasons of The Wire, and I really need to see five. You know how, like, when something gets hyped up so much, and then, like, there's no way it can live up to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I'm trying to think what some examples are of that. Like, oh, so I built up, me and my friends were talking about the fantastic ending for The Usual Suspects. And, like, how great it was. And then my friend from college, named Sean, he got me really into movies in general. He hadn't seen it, but I had seen it. And so, like, I was like, you gotta go see it, man. The ending's incredible. He went and saw it, and he was like, I called the ending. And it was because we had told him how incredible it was. He was, like, really thinking about the ending as we went to it, you know? So, like, it's so easy for your expectations to be blown if it's built up so much.
Right. And actually, something that I've thought about as we've, you know, done our various countdowns and things and about building up expectations, there's this episode of Newhart, the second TV series of Bob Newhart.
Okay.
In it. And I think it's called No Tigers at the Circus. And towards the end of the episode, he makes this speech about how when he was a kid, he was really excited to go to the circus. And, you know, his parents had told him about all these things that he'd see at the circus, all these great things, you know, clowns and jugglers and the tigers. And he got most excited about the tigers. And then he got to the circus finally and he saw all these things. You know, he saw the jugglers, he saw the acrobats, he saw all this stuff. But the tigers, they didn't have. There were no tigers at the circus. And that, you know, missing that one element of the expectation that had been built up blew the whole thing for him. And suddenly it didn't mean anything because it didn't live up to the expectation that had been set just because of this one flaw. And that just seems really, you know, really poignant. It really seems to hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some shows, and my number one example of this is Lost, where, like, it was really built up for me, like, this is incredible, one of the best shows ever. It's definitely on the TV Guide top 60 shows. I don't know what number it is, but and I watched it and it was good. I mean, there were some really good episodes, there were some fantastic moments, but, like, it all seemed kind of gibberishy, and, like, I was like, when does it turn incredible? and it never turned incredible for me. Like, there were no tigers, you know? Mm-hmm. But The Wire. So, I love The Wire. Everybody says the third or the fourth season of The Wire is the best season of The Wire. Most people say the fourth. I've heard the third. I've only seen the first two. The second season, okay. But the first season was... It actually lived up to the expectation for me. It came together in a way that just kind of blew my mind. I was like, I did not know it was going to do that, and it was as good as I was hoping it might be. And I was like, this was back when I was living at home, and I probably had like four beers that night, and I was watching the last two episodes. No, I had a rule, one episode per day, because at about four episodes in, I got really hooked, and I wanted to watch the whole thing straight, but I wanted to preserve it, too. I was like, one episode per day. And so I got to the last three episodes, and I watched the third to the last... No, well, it was one of the last episodes, and it ends with, like, one of the characters getting shot. And I'm like, I can't just stop there. I gotta see it. And so then I watched the rest of the season. I just watched the whole thing. And I remember, like, the ending, like, there's some characters who die or whose fates change, and it all comes together and reflects... like things that had already happened at the end, and it blew my mind. So The Wire, see The Wire. That's what I'm saying.
I'll do my best. You would you watch it on HBO Go?
is the FBI listening right now?
Yeah, I guess we gotta keep in mind who's listening. Okay, I get you, Drift. I get picking up what you land at.
Yeah, there we go. So I would say watch The Wire.
Will you? might you help me in this endeavor?
I think I have it on my. I have the DVDs that I can lend to you. No, I actually do have it on DVD that I can lend to you.
Oh,
so
excellent.
I got it afterwards because I liked it that much. But now the thing that I'm worried about now is that I've laid it even higher because I've said not only is it great, but it actually matches that expectation.
It's like double-layered.
It's like layered,
it's like
you know?
A double-decker bus.
But then if it also matches your expectations, ooh. What if we go tell another person?
It's like triple distilled.
Because I don't think Grant or Colton has seen it. Like, we go say, yo, I told Brian that it matched the expectations, and it matched his, too, from there, yeah. I don't know.
I think Family Guy got it right with the, you know, that Breaking Bad clip.
Yeah.
it's the greatest show I've ever seen, except maybe The Wire.
Yeah. Because that's, yeah. Okay, so I gotta say, maybe I should just... Okay, I've just been talking about The Wire. So your turn. What are some shows you haven't seen?
Some shows I haven't seen. Well, we hit, I feel like, the big ones with... I've never had HBO, actually. It comes up a lot on my Brian Terrell Movie Night page that I didn't really have cable for a long time as a child. Just about everything I watched on TV was PBS, or like I tuned into the networks for cartoons on Saturday morning. And I've kind of been playing catch-up for a lot of my life, at least as far as TV is concerned. And so no specific titles other than the HBO stuff really come to mind a bunch. Actually, one, maybe a nice segue here, is the last podcast we did, it came up that neither of us has seen as much Seinfeld as we think we might like.
Well, I have my... top five shows that I really need to see, and I haven't seen yet.
Oh, so you came prepared.
I always have a top five. You need to be ready for that.
I gotta,
every podcast,
next time,
I have a top five.
I'll have it.
You need to have it, whatever the topic is, you need to have a tangentially related top five. That's the rule, because I always have one. So,
he's just pulled this out of his pocket.
My top five shows that I have not seen that I know that I personally need to see because I'm convinced I would love. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number five is The Sopranos.
Okay, that would be on mine as well. Have not seen The Sopranos.
I've liked most of what I've heard about it, and obviously it's so acclaimed, and most of the critics I trust say, yeah, it's that good. So I would see it. I mean, I really want to see it. There's been some backlash against it, but I want to see it.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking an interesting thing would be if we came to something that both of us had not seen.
That would be a good
podcast.
If we
could kind of summarize what our take on it is, having not seen any
Well,
of it.
Yeah, so that's one idea. Another idea is something that we both love. So, like, you could watch The Wire season 1, mm-hmm. and then you could give me something that I haven't seen. Like, sure. maybe my number two, when we're about to get to.
Okay. Well, I won't spoil your countdown. But I was thinking, if we were to right now summarize The Sopranos, what would you say?
Oh, so The Sopranos is... It's a show about gangsters.
Okay, and you got a complex protagonist who, like, Tony, does bad yeah. things. But
and,
like
funny, dark him. Things happen to him, and, like, he goes on these... things that are maybe some normal people do them, but everything is filtered through him being a gangster, which is like, it's like maybe 25% funny, like, oh, I'm this criminal boss and I have to, like, take my daughter to college, you know, like something normal people have to do, but 75% like serious, like,
yeah, like
I'm scared that everyone's gonna kill me, and like I'm worried about killing this other people, and like I'm kind of crazy because of that, so I go to a therapist.
It's like a shrink. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I think The Sopranos is.
I agree.
Okay.
I think we've got that down pat.
My number four is, I'm sure, it's probably in the top 10 of the 60, and it's MASH.
Hmm.
I'm convinced that I would really like MASH because it's described as like a drama / comedy with like really great characters that has just like really good ideas and really good episodes and was kind of groundbreaking and like exploring characters and like all that stuff hits check marks for stuff I like. Like,
how much have you seen?
I've seen none of
MASH.
You've
never seen MASH?
Never seen MASH.
Oh.
Yeah.
Used to be on TV Land, so I've seen several episodes.
Well, have you seen the American or the British? So is there a laugh track on the ones you've seen?
Wait a second. There's two different ones?
Yeah. Well, the main difference is the laugh track. The British one does not have the laugh track.
Oh. That's unusual.
Yeah. And the makers did not... I think that's right. The makers did not want it to have a laugh track. All
right.
But, like, it was kind of... It's a comedy... I mean, my understanding is it's mostly a comedy show. And so, back then, all comedies had laugh tracks. So they put in a laugh track on top of it.
I'm going to drop a bomb here and say that the next one coming up in my TV countdown, Small Screen 66, is actually going to be Blackadder.
Okay.
The BBC series
yeah.
with Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah.
It's like a combination Mr. Bean, Blackadder
okay.
host. And Blackadder just constantly uses... Well, both of them constantly use laugh track.
Really?
And it's weird, especially in the case of Mr. Bean, because it's like a primarily silent show. It's like Rowan Atkinson's, you know, chance to embrace his inner silent comedian,
uh-huh.
like a Charlie Chaplin or a Buster Keaton, or particularly Jacques Tati, the character of Mr. Hulot.
Okay.
But to have, like, this jarring laugh track constantly...
Interesting.
It's just kind of weird, and I'm going to mention that in my post.
Okay.
So let's go back to the topic.
So MASH was my number four. My number three is the one you just mentioned, Seinfeld. Simpsons is one of my favorite shows ever. Seinfeld... It's often lumped with Simpsons because it was like the great comedy of the 90s, like the two of them were. And I'm embarrassed to say I've only seen maybe a dozen episodes of Seinfeld, if even. And I always laugh when I see it. It doesn't connect with me quite as much from the episodes I've seen, but I feel like if I got into a rhythm of it, I would probably like it more.
I'm in the same boat in that I've probably seen a dozen episodes, and yet the ones that I've seen, it seems like... They've, like, all resonated with me.
Really? Okay.
It's, you know, there's one where Jerry's dating a woman who has a toy collection, a vintage toy collection, and he really wants to play with the toys, but she won't let him. And so he, like, drugs her with tryptophan or something.
Wow.
But it's so that he can play with this toy collection.
The show is a little out there sometimes.
It's out there. There's an entire episode where they wander through a parking garage, trying
oh, yeah.
to find their car.
Well, no, that one... Okay, I know enough about Seinfeld to know. I watched a documentary on it. I haven't seen all the episodes, but I've seen a documentary about it. Anyways, that has a famous ending where they get to the car, and they get in the car, and the car won't start. Well, that was unplanned. The car was supposed to start, and they were supposed to leave, and that was going to be the ending. What happens is they all get in, Kramer tries to start the car. It doesn't start. He gets out of the car, smacks the top of the car, and is like, And then he gets back in, and just it doesn't start, and that's the end of the episode. And it's so good. It's like it's better than if it the car had started.
And my favorite episode that I've seen. This is going to come up in my TV countdown, even though I've only seen a couple episodes. This one episode resonated with me so much. Is that Kramer finds the set of the Merv Griffin show in a dumpster, and he turns his apartment into a TV show.
That sounds pretty meta.
And so everybody he brings into his apartment, he acts like they're guests on his TV show. And he's like, address the cameras when you speak. Like, what cameras?
Yeah.
I just love that episode, yeah.
My favorite... Okay, I have to say, the fact that we've just talked for 4 minutes or however long about Seinfeld, when we've only seen a couple episodes and neither of us are experts... Maybe is a sign that we should both watch Seinfeld.
But, I agree. So what's our take on Seinfeld, having both never seen, not seen much?
Well, the thing that I was going to cite that is one of my favorite line deliveries of any comedy I've ever seen ever is the episode where Kramer gets cast in a Woody Allen movie. Have you seen that one?
No.
So there's a famous line. So he gets cast in Woody Allen movie, and then he does something dumb, like he trips over himself, and Woody Allen thinks it's really funny, so he gives him a speaking line in the movie. And his speaking line is, "These pretzels are making me thirsty," at a bar. So this is like a really famous scene. So anyone who's seen time, I'm like, yeah, okay, everyone knows what you're talking about. Anyways.
I've heard the line.
You can find the clip on YouTube, but it's... they have a scene where all of the characters say, "These pretzels are making me thirsty," and so it goes from Kramer to, I don't know the order, but it's like Elaine and then Jerry, and then it goes to George, and George is like, I don't know what it is, he's like parking cars or something, he's got some really bad job, so he's really stressed out, so he's like, the way that he delivers it, "These pretzels are making me thirsty," and he says it's so funny, and you just can't watch it and not laugh. It's so good. Anyways,
wait, I'm going to interject here just okay. to say that I really want to do a supercut of all the podcasts that have happened so far every time that you say "so good."
Really, do I say that a lot?
It's happened at least 50 times.
I'm sorry that that's my
that's
thing.
That's okay. I'm glad that there's so many "so good" things in the world.
It's just, it's a world where there are so good things. It's true.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Hey, clearly Seinfeld is enough in our content. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's my number three. My number two is, this is the one that we should both watch the first season and tell each other what we think. Breaking Bad. I have not seen any Breaking Bad.
I've seen the whole thing three times.
Wow. I've seen the first 20 minutes of the first episode, and that's it. And the only reason I stopped watching is because I fell asleep, because I was really tired that day. So, its reputation precedes it. I haven't seen Breaking Bad. I'm embarrassed to say yada yada. So, hey, wait, that's another Seinfeld.
You're just working in the Seinfeld.
Okay. My number
Shrinkage.
Let's see.
What else?
Spongeworthy.
Okay, there we go.
Soup Nazi. No Soup for
No
You.
No Soup for You. They're covering our bases. The Puffy Shirt.
He drops
Newman.
Fargus. Have you seen the Bizarro episode?
Oh, with the Bizarro versions of them. I have seen that one with
Bizarro Jerry
and
sees
Bizarro friends.
He sees Bizarro Newman, and Bizarro Newman is named Fargus. He's like, "Fargus, hey buddy," and then hugs him or something like that. In a word, or in two words, so good. I have to be careful now. I didn't know I had a thing that I said.
No, I definitely have a thing too.
What's your thing?
People point out to me, it's anyway.
Anyway, okay. My number one, I'm going to describe the show. You're probably not going to guess it, but I'm going to describe it anyways. So, I'm really into shows, this is like kind of embarrassing, but like stories and shows that are about like coming of age and like high school. Like, I tend to get more into those types of shows. So, it falls under that. I'm not as into Supernatural, so it's not Buffy. I also kind of like sports. I mean, I do. I quite like sports.
Is it Friday Night Lights?
It is Friday Night Lights. I'm so sure that I will love Friday Night Lights. Like, it hits all of the check marks for a show that I would love. The problem is, and this has kind of been a recurring thing for me with, like, so many of the shows I want to watch are dramas. I don't watch hour-long or 45-minute-long episodes anymore.
Ooh. We could do, like, a whole episode about what the ideal length of a TV show is. Because there's definitely, like, hour-long shows. There's only a few that can, like, keep my interest for a whole hour.
So
maybe that's a sign of the times, but
The Wire is truly an hour long. And then there are other shows I've seen that are, like, Lost, that are truncated for, I mean, it's truncated hour, so it's 44 minutes usually. That's an hour with commercials.
Right.
I think Friday Night Lights is an hour with commercials.
Wait a second. Does HBO not have commercials?
No, they don't.
Oh, I have to get HBO now.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
I know,
know,
isn't
that.
It? Yeah, well, that means, like their half-hour shows are truly 30 minutes.
Whoa.
And their hour-long shows are truly an hour. The thing is, you feel it, dude. It's like after, like, 50 minutes, you're like, this feels really long, you know? Because you're used to a drama
to
being
get up
45
and go
minutes.
To the bathroom,
yeah. But
get
then
some
again,
pretzels.
Yeah. So I'm everything I've heard. Like, I know people who don't like teen shows, they don't like sports, and they love Friday Night Lights. Like, it has a great soundtrack, they say. I'm like, okay, that matters a lot to me. It's got, like, really great characters and, like, inspiring speeches at the end of episodes. It's like, okay, that matters a lot to me. It's, like, got, like, teen characters who face teen challenges. I'm like, okay, I'm into that. So I'm convinced I would love this show. So is there, like, a single show that, like, that is your white whale? Maybe not your white whale, but the show that, like, you've got to see?
I'd say the biggest one is The Wire. I've definitely had my interest piqued. Like, of the ones on my check list, I feel like I got to check that out.
Okay.
Both because it's it showed up on your list, and it just seems like it could be cool.
It's, yeah.
You know, I feel like I could definitely talk at length about Breaking Bad just because I've seen it that much. To take a step back and kind of veer sideways for a moment.
Okay.
Definitely see that one.
Okay.
If I have my moment to speak, I'm going to say definitely check out Breaking Bad. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it is.
And my white whale. I feel like another thing that I missed out on is early 90s Nickelodeon.
Oh, really?
I certainly hear it talked up, and I'm sure a lot of that is nostalgia.
A lot of it is nostalgia.
Right, because I remember I saw a little bit of the show All That, and then when the programming block of the 90s are All That returned to the cable channel Teen Nick, I tuned in, and I was like with my little brother. It's like, okay, you gotta see this. You know, this is what it's all about. And, but All That was just... It
was
really
not All That?
No, it wasn't.
It was not All That?
No. So, like, I mean, a lot of it is just rose-tinted glasses, really.
Yep.
Although I will say I'm still a fan of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yep.
Like,
well, that's not surprising. Brian, I've been meaning to say, I've been listening to this podcast. It's called Better Off Undead. So I found them kind of roundabout way, but I think their Better Off Undead podcast might be my favorite thing they've done. It's three guys who they write, like, horror, and they know jack shit about horror. So, like, they're like, we need to do a podcast about horror because we'll, like, recruit our audience, but they don't know anything. I mean, so they know a little bit about it. There's one guy in particular who knows some about it. But they, like, they're just, like, them goofing around. Like, they'll talk for horror about for, like, 5 minutes, and then they'll spend the rest of the time, like, making fun of each other or, like, joking about stupid crap, and it's really funny. So every time I listen to it, I'm like, this both does and does not make me want to be more into horror shows. And I know as a horror host, you're more into horror than most that I know. So
yeah.
It occasionally makes me think of you.
Yep, so. I've got a post about a horror host coming up. Judge it by my pace, it'll probably actually come up after this one that we're working on right now.
Oh, that's okay. So the last bit of this, are we okay to transition to that?
I think so.
Okay, is the last bit is shows that we want to see. So, like, things we haven't seen, that can be real things that exist that we haven't seen, but also things that we would like to exist. So the idea from this came from something you mentioned to me. You had a really good idea for a sitcom. And I was like, yes, and I have ideas for shows too, so we should do a podcast about that. And apparently we're going to do 15 minutes of that, or it's going to extend into something longer.
See,
but
if you have me sit on this side of the table, I can't see the counter, and
sorry
I don't know what
that.
Our pacing is, and so that's part of the reason I was trying to get over there.
We can,
but now we got this interrogation set up, so we're stuck with it.
Okay.
That's what we're going to stick with.
Background for the listeners. We were deciding how we were going to lay ourselves out to record this podcast. We decided on across from each other, so Brian can't see the timer. And we target an hour, and we're at 45 minutes.
That's
so
okay. You know, this is Act 3. I feel like the idea you just described as very good was more spur of the moment for me.
Really?
I misread, you know, I trying to look cool when I come and visit the household over here. I misread a DVD box. I thought it had something to do with Antarctica. In fact, had nothing to do with Antarctica, but
wait, one of the DVDs we own?
Yes.
Like me and my wife?
Yes, correct. I forget what exactly it said, but it wasn't Antarctica.
Oh, was it the Hoopnautica one? Or
Hoopnautica, that was it.
You
something
see Antarctica?
To exercise with hula hoops.
Yeah.
But
that's not me, that's my wife, by the way.
Well, I mean, nothing wrong with exercise. I feel
okay.
Like I could probably work some in. I don't, but I probably could benefit from it. Antarctica, I feel like in general, it's underutilized. It's down
like
there.
Like in all of pop culture?
I mean, just period. It's a whole bunch of land down there that nobody's using because it's cold. I feel like that just shows the limitations of the bounds of human ingenuity. It's like, just come up with some kind of hot wardrobe. It's something that
yeah.
heats itself from the inside, and we could be, like, colonizing Antarctica.
Yeah, people are like, why haven't we gone to Mars yet? Like, well, we can't even freaking go to Antarctica yet. Like, we can't go to our own Earth yet.
Right.
We can't
or,
go
like,
underwater yet.
Yeah.
Like, why are we worrying about other planets when we don't even master our
own
planet?
We haven't utilized everything we have here. And so, I think the people who are down in Antarctica are the scientists, you know, in the research stations, and I think, like, that is ripe for comedy. It, you know, John Carpenter showed that it's ripe for horror.
Yeah,
there's the isolation going on down there, you know, for the Thing, which is a remake.
Uh huh.
But
oh wait, the Thing. What's the first one called? The Thing
from Another World.
From Another
like
World.
The 1950s.
Okay.
So it was a remake of that. With apparently way cooler special effects. If I were to back up real quick and just say one hole that I've not filled in my film experience is John Carpenter's The Thing. But I think there could also be potential for comedy down there. You know, you're trapped at the bottom of the world when there's like one ATM to get your money out of.
Okay.
At the South
Pole. You're stuck to see the same 12 people every day.
Right. So
yeah.
It would be like, be like the Big Bang Theory, because everybody's nerds, but then those are the only people you see.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I would watch the crap out of that show, I have to say. I would be into that.
So
there's definitely potential there.
I'm interested in your pitches that were, you know, built from more of an idea than just misreading a DVD box.
Okay, so I'll start with my most fully developed idea. Okay, so when I was in college, I was on the school newspaper, and so things you need to know about being on a school newspaper. First of all, there's so much drama on the school newspaper. Like, everybody is, like, dating each other and, like, politics with each other and, like, arguing with each other. So I think there should be a sitcom about a college or a school newspaper. And I looked it up, and there's only, like, one, like, Canadian teen sitcom, like, that didn't look very good. I forget what it's called. But they're like, that has not been utilized. Like, there have been shows about newspapers, but they usually kind of go the political route. And, like, they're, but as I said, I'm kind of into, like, I definitely eat up the shows that are about, like, you know, the coming of age story. So, like, I think you could combine the coming of age story with all of the stuff that, like, the stories write themselves. The problem with things like football shows or, like, drama clubs or other clubs is that they have like a specific focus. They do that one thing, but
right.
like a newspaper can cover everything that's going on at a school.
Right, because it's writing about what's happening.
Exactly. So have you seen Party Down? I'm sure there are other shows that use this format, but Party Down is the best example. It has the characters and their relationships developing is like about a half of the show, maybe a third of each episode, and then the rest of it is like these, they're a catering company. So the rest of it is like the party that they're catering is usually some crazy party in some context. So like it's a little bit of the characters and the rest of it is like this crazy party that they're doing. So I feel like a show about a school newspaper could be the same way. It could be these characters, but also whatever stupid thing. And like you come up with 100 things, like a school election where everyone takes themselves too seriously, or like the school football team, like all of the things that are otherwise like clubs or things that happen, you could have be an episode of this show.
Okay.
I want to write the show. Like all these shows, I want to be the one who writes it.
I'd watch it. Yeah. I would, definitely. And if I were to say, I don't have a whole bunch of TV show pitches lined up, but two ideas that I have had in the past have both been stolen from my brain.
Like what?
Well, there's one that is only kind of, sort of, which is, are you familiar with Workaholics?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, basically the concept of just three guys, 320-somethings, making their way, just being goofy. Really, what it was like my interactions with, well, one, Ogrot, who you've met,
yeah.
Ben,
yeah.
From Gauntlet, and another friend. You know, we've had our wacky adventures, and the other friend who you've not yet met had said, oh, this would make a great TV show, just the, you know, the random stuff that we do. And I'm like, that sounds kind of dumb. I don't think that could ever work as a TV show. And I think Workaholics is basically that same spirit. It's just
it's
three
like that
guys
show, yeah.
doing guy stuff,
uh-huh.
you know, very of the times, very young 20-somethings. And it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I really like Workaholics. It's definitely going to come up on my TV countdown. The other one that I'm thinking of, and what's our time, by the way, since
52.
I can't see outside of the screen. Okay, that's fine. The other one, the biggest, worst example, because I think this could totally work, and obviously has worked, because they took it from my mind, is, are you familiar with the show Warehouse 13?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a show on the Sci-Fi Channel, and aside from that, I'm going to tell you my pitch of the show that I had in my mind, because Warehouse 13 is basically this. So the idea that I had was for a story about a secret society called Cypher.
Okay.
And actually, it's a government organization. It's a part of the Secret Service. It's like the Secret Service.
Okay.
And they deal with covering up paranormal phenomena. So, but, you know, I know you just said you're not so into the paranormal, but...
well, I can respect
that. It's basically the other side of the X-Files. Like, X-Files, you've got Mulder and Scully, and they're trying to, you know, go around exposing stuff that's going on. And they're contending with this upper echelon of FBI people who are hiding stuff. Like,
okay.
There's the cigarette-smoking man, and he's keeping everything mum's the word.
Mm-hmm.
And so my idea was a story where you're following a pair of agents who are in this upper tier, and they have to, you know, cover up the stuff. And you've got this guy, in my story, they're all identified by glyphs on their arms. And so they're like each agent, you know, in the Men in Black movies, they're all letters.
Right.
So in this, they're all punctuation marks. And so you've got an agent who's Pilcro, which is the symbol to start a new paragraph, to start a new chapter.
Pilcro, is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called a Pilcro. It looks like a little P.
P with an extra line.
Right. And so Pilcro is the protagonist generally, and partnered with Asterisk. And so Agent Pilcro is kind of, he's excited to be where he's at. He's a, you know, a guy who has spent his life basically interested in the paranormal and is just kind of saved from being a run-of-the-mill like crazy person from stumbling into the reality of this secret society.
Secret Service.
Right. And
Secret
so,
Tunnel. Go on. Not to interrupt.
That was my favorite bookend, by the way, so far, was the Secret Tunnel
song.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
It made me laugh. And so he's a little bit... He's happy to be where he's at. Whereas most of the agents who get sucked into this encounter the things like werewolves and vampires in dark circumstances. Like, they lose family members to these things. And it's very serious and sinister the way they find their ways into this organization. Whereas he was just kind of a fanboy. And the others are more serious about it. So you get people like Asterisk, who's a woman, who is very by the letter. You know, letter of the law, very, very strict.
Yeah.
And if you've seen Warehouse 13, it's that.
Really?
It's like note for note, it's my pitch.
Wow.
And so you've got the guy who is like very happy-go-lucky, happy to be where he's at, and the woman who is more by the book, who has been in the organization longer. And the other thing is their overseer, their chief, is like this wise guy who is also kind of wacky.
Okay.
And in my story, he was basically Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
So that's the one difference, in that their boss, their chief spy guy, paranormal spy guy, is not Morgan Freeman.
That's the difference.
That's the one difference.
They don't go by punctuation marks, though.
They don't. Okay. They do not. But other
that's
than
a
that,
good idea.
Pretty much beat for beat, it's my story.
Interesting.
I feel cheated.
Well, so you just described a show that already exists.
Right.
So, okay, so my next one is... Okay, so... You know how Cheers... Have you seen Cheers?
I have not seen Cheers. I suppose that's probably the biggest network television.
There's another one. Well, that's maybe not the biggest, but it's certainly that's one. I love Cheers. I especially love the first season of Cheers. So the first season of Cheers takes place entirely inside the bar. In one bar, all the scenes take place inside there, and so I really loved it because it just like it was all writing and acting, like there was no room for gimmick, and I loved it. And like you have bottle episodes, but you don't have bottle shows anymore. Like that, it just appealed to me so much, and I want to see another one of those. But okay, so. Thinking about, like, along the lines of shows that I say that I enjoy, they're kind of coming-of-age stories. Okay, can you think of any famous movies that are kind of bottle stories that are coming-of-age stories, like famous teen comedy/dramas? It's The Breakfast Club.
Okay.
So, like, The Breakfast Club...
I'm glad you set that up for me.
Yeah, The Breakfast Club as a TV show. So, basically... It's like a bottle show, like Cheers.
So is it like each week they have...
Yeah, so they have weekly detention.
Sure.
And I was thinking that, like, I gradually evolved this into an idea that I'm actually thinking of writing as a story. I've written the first 5,000 words or so of the story. But, like, that would be a book. It wouldn't obviously be a TV show. But, like, I would really want to see this idea of, like, of teens who are, like... every week, or like whatever however you want to have it, but like basically be like kind of the Cheers model of a bottle show, but like redone again. And it doesn't even need to be in a bar, just like something. And like I'm pitching it as like a Saturday detention thing, but it could be anything, where, because I really like that, where it's just all about the characters, you know. So that's my number two pitch. I don't know. Have you... Okay, so, well, you
so
have...
So, like, if I'm on the spot to what, pitch another TV show?
Well, you don't necessarily have to.
Okay. I feel like you're raring to go. We got one more in the pipeline?
Let's see, I remember I had four at one point. Let me see if I can think of what...
Oh, wait, I do have one, actually.
Okay, go for it.
And this is an idea that I've actually kind of lifted from my friend... I think he'd be cool with it if it did turn into a TV show, it's called Imported. At least that's the title I've given it.
Okay.
And it's sort of an Office-style, that format, you know, the mockumentary-style format, but it's about the founding of a micronation. Now, have you ever heard the story of Sealand?
I know a little bit about it, but
okay.
Why don't you tell
it? It's like an oil drilling platform that... apparently is outside Britain's national waters. It, like, technically counts as international waters. And so a couple folks, like, calculated that and headed out to this platform out in the ocean and declared it its own country by merit of, you know, squatters' rights, basically. And so a story like that, in that these characters go out to stake their claim on this patch of nowhere out in the middle of the water and create their own country and sort of do their reports about establishing this nation. And it's difficult because there's so few of them. And they kind of run into some issues that bigger countries would encounter, like, you know, hostile natives. Maybe there's already somebody squatting on the platform. Or, like, they have to establish a wildlife refuge because a bird lands on the platform or something.
Oh, yeah. That opens up some stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And just get the documentary-style format of them.
I think the metric of a good story is, can you come up with, like, just, like, without trying too hard, can you come up with, like, 10 or 15, like, really good stories
different
that are, like,
things that could happen to
specific
these
to that premise?
Right.
So, like, my college newspaper one kind of fits that bill, because I think about it, and I think of, like, oh, like, they have to report an election where everyone takes it too seriously. They have to report this and that, and, like, the ideas just come to mind. Granted, some of that's personal experience, but that kind of, your thing kind of hits the bill, too. It's, like, it hits those check marks, too. You can just start coming up, yeah, I really like your idea of, like, a bird land, so they have to come a wild refuge. Like, there's, like, so many things you can come up with that, like, are real things in a nation that you just need to, like, turn into, like, a humorously tiny microcosm. That would be fun. So my last pitch is, I think there's a movie that's out right now that, like, you were talking about things that stole your idea, mm-hmm. or, like, you and your friend's ideas, specifically, I guess, the Warehouse one, Warehouse 13. I saw this movie, I was like, I've been waiting for this to happen, and it's called, I can't remember now. It's like a movie that a guy filmed over 12 years.
Oh.
Boyhood? Or
yeah, I think that's the name.
Is it Boyhood?
My brother was talking about that, yeah.
So that movie is, it was, they had the same actors filmed across 12 different years. So what I want them to do is I want them to sign, like, some young actor who's, like, kind of hungry for a job, like a few actors, and, like, sign them to a 10-year contract where they do, like, 10 weeks of work a year for this show. And then, like, if I'm a billionaire, I'm funding this show. And it's, like, it's, they're gonna do, like, from fourth grade to when they're 20, okay? It's gonna be, like, their whole, like, going from being, like, 10-year-olds and, like, frisking to know each other or whatever year you want to start it at. And, like, you film, like, maybe 10 episodes a year for, like, 10 years, and you, like, actually have the characters grow up with the show, but you, like, have it kind of this plot that goes along for a long time, and it's, like, you don't have an insane amount of episodes, but maybe you have, like, 10 episodes, or 10 seasons, like, 100 episodes or something like that. Like, I would be really interested to see something that actually has the characters spanning real time or something like that.
That would be really cool. And to bring it back to movies we may or may not have seen, have you ever seen the 7-Up documentaries?
I was going to say the 7-Up of TV shows. I haven't seen it. I know what it is.
I saw 49-Up, which I think is the most recent one.
Is that? Yeah, so the 7-Up series is they take, every 7 years they do a documentary of these people. And it's just like they randomly chosen
like,
people,
like,
right?
Six or seven or, I mean, I guess seven would make sense.
I think each...
However many British children. They started when they were seven.
Yeah, and every time a couple more people opt out. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. But yeah, so they do that. But like it's the same idea, like where you have it for 1 year and maybe you show a few episodes like of people that year. Like I would be really interested to see a show like that. So
what?
I mean I guess that's the same as like any like the Wonder Years. Okay, so like it starts when Kevin Arnold is just starting middle school or whatever.
and it goes to almost to when he graduates high school, and so you see him get older. And that's one of the things I love about that show, is that you see him get older, and like the stories change as they get older. I want to show to like actually like big picture that from the start, you know. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So those are things that things we've never seen. So it's movies and shows that exist that we haven't seen, and ideas we have for shows. I guess we didn't get into movies.
Right. So, I mean, we basically covered our bases. One final thing that I've never seen that I wanted to bring up is actually food products. And I promise I can nail this down in a minute.
I know where this is going.
Okay. Well, for one, I had a friend a couple of years back. As time marches on, it's probably like 8 years ago already. But he introduced me to Muddy Buddies, which is Chex Mix covered with chocolate.
It's good.
And I thought, this is great. You know, they've got to mass produce this. And within a year, Chex Mix they've got something called Sweet and Salty Mix now. That they do. They have chocolate flavors. They have caramel flavors. All kinds of stuff like that. And I'm just waiting for the day that they release Chocolate Coke. You know, they did Vanilla Coke. Chocolate Coke can't be too far along. My dad says they had it back in his day. You know, at the soda fountains, they put chocolate syrup in the soda at the soda fountain.
And he said it was good?
He said it was good. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't expect to see it in the cans.
Okay.
So that's Chris our concluding note for you. Just wait. You'll see Chocolate Coke.
Chocolate Coke. Okay, well, thank you for that. So we had our movies and TV shows we haven't seen, our TV show ideas, and our Chocolate Coke ideas. So. All right, well, I think it's time to wrap up, and I think we covered the points we wanted to hit. So that was fun. Good hour.
Yeah,
Good hour. So. All right, this is Dan saying goodbye, and I'm with Brian.
And Brian saying farewell as well.
Adios.
Boy, these pretzels are making me thirsty.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
These pretzels are making me thirsty. These pretzels are making me thirsty!